I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 2:35 PM. We are joined today by members Representative Josephson, Representative Hannan, Representative Galvin, Representative Stab, Representative Edgman, Representative Flom. Representative Ortiz is online. And Representative Kronk, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Foster, myself, Representative Johnson. We are assisted today by Emily Mesh, and our committee secretary is Leah Frazier. Today, this afternoon, we will continue with our amendments to the operating and mental health budgets. We ended on amendment number 37. Representative Josephson, may I have a motion, please?
I move amendment 37.
Yes.
There's been an objection. Would you like to speak to your amendment?
Yes. Madam Chair, the amendment comes from a colleague of ours who sits or sat on the DEC subcommittee and noted that from her own experience as an engineer, that there were DEC permits that were not processed quickly. She described a system, which surprised me, of people, applicants using their MyAlaska account. And she said that DEC permit renewal processes don't carry over information from existing approved permits. And by the way, to lay some foundation, what this does is add an analyst programmer for the reasons I'm stating. The DEC permit renewal processes don't carry over information from existing approved permits. Some renewals require applicants to simply restate much of their original application on a fillable PDF. Also noted is that a couple other things. When a permit is approved by DEC, they usually publish the permit itself, but often not the application that led to that permit, even though the applications are public records accessible by request. Requiring public records requests for these documents makes it difficult for applicants to model their applications after successful examples, increasing workloads for applicants and lowering the quality of incoming permit applications. And finally, the amendment would seek to address a problem encountered in a member's professional work, a complaint heard by many in the construction industry that DEC permit applications and rule processes are a huge pain to navigate. And so I believe that a colleague through life experience and sitting on the subcommittee concluded that this was part of the cure, and so I make this motion.
All right, thank you, Representative Josephson. Anyone would like to speak to Amendment 37, Representative Tomaszewski? Matt.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. Through the chair, I don't remember seeing this ask during the subcommittee process. I guess I'm just curious as to why it's being asked now. And is there a particular location where this position was going to be stationed? Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'd like to speak if I have an opportunity.
All right. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm in support of this particular amendment. This helps us to be even more open for business. I heard one thing about issues with getting projects off the road. It's the permitting process. And, we want to be about supporting our economy. We want to be about supporting projects that help build that economy and a faster, potentially quicker way of permitting those projects will help us get closer to that. I'm in full support. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Kronk, followed by Representative Cole.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I guess the question for the chair of the subcommittee, was this brought up and did DEC actually ask for this position? Thank you.
Representative Tomaszewski.
No, like I said, I don't remember seeing this asked from the DEC in the subcommittee process, and so that's why I'm a little confused by it as well.
Representative Flom.
I have no questions. It was asked.
Okay. Anyone else? All right. Representative Pronk, do you maintain your objection?
Yes.
All right. Madam Secretary.
If I could just.
Oh, get... sorry. I apologize. Thank you for reminding me.
Through the chair, the one question that is answerable is that according to the board chart I was given, the intent, at least the subcommittee member, was to post the new person in the Anchorage office.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Josephson. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Colom?
No.
Representative Kronk?
No.
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Galvin?
Yes.
Representative Hannon?
No.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Ortez?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
3 yay, 8 nay.
By a vote of 3 yays and 8 nays, amendment number 37 has not been adopted. Next up we have amendment number 38 by Representative Josephson.
I move amendment 38.
Check.
Okay, there's been an objection. Would you like to speak to your amendment?
I would. And it'll be slightly longer than the previous amendment motion. So I sat as sort of the eyes and ears of the House Minority Finance Committee on the Department of Health and the Department of Family and Community Services. And I noticed something that my colleague, Representative Fields, took up in subcommittee, and that is that the budget funds for the Office of Children's Services, Services Management, a temporary increase for required legal services to address class action lawsuit. It's a one-time increment of $1 million. And what struck my eye and Representative Fields' eye is that the Ledge Finance Division, and I know I'm supposed to know the order of operations here, but I assume they get their comment from something they've read from the state or OMB, I guess. I don't know where else they'd get it from. But what they've written here is this one-time increment. So here's the request. Why do we need $1 million? This one-time increment will allow the department to retain additional legal counsel via a reimbursable services agreement with the Department of Law for legal services and to procure expert witness testimony. And here's the interesting part, and to initiate a public relations campaign. So Department, I believe, of this must be, I think this is DFCS. Right. It is. Department of Family and Community Services is seeking $1 million to pay legal fees. But part of the request is to initiate, is because I guess the Department of Law is going to initiate a public relations campaign. All right. So that's interesting. So I asked my staff to do what in the common vernacular is called a deep dive. And I wanted to know what are the merits of this lawsuit. And by the way, our Ledge Finance Division also notes that the lawsuit seeks compensation in the form of a consent decree. Okay. So that tells me that the litigants, they're called ABC or A Better Childhood, want the state to concede that it's not performing well and to do a better job. And then, by the way, not just say it, but mean it and fund it or act differently. For the edification of all of us, the same subcommittee book page one says the lawsuit alleges that OCS fails to provide adequate case management and permanency planning services, does not provide the required monetary and licensure support to foster families and children. That's sort of true because we're offering them more. Okay. Including kinship maintenance payments is required under federal law, and that the mental and physical health care needs of foster children with or without disabilities are not being met. Okay. But there's more. So Mother Jones magazine wrote about this, and here is some of the things I've learned about this. Mother Jones, in their investigation, discussed the symbiotic relationship between child welfare agencies. There are too many children in custody and not enough places to put them. There are large for-profit companies with beds to fill. I concede Mother Jones is a progressive magazine and looks at the world through that lens. But nonetheless, they talked about North Star's parent company, Universal Health Services, which settled in another very similar case with the Justice Department for $122 million in 2020. So here we are. They want money for attorneys, does this agency. And yet, one of the agencies or one of the hospitals we've sent children to, North Star, settled a similar case with the Justice Department for $122 million. So why don't we settle? That's the question I would ask. Issues were billing for medically unnecessary inpatient behavioral health services, failing to provide adequate and appropriate services, paying illegal inducements to federal health care beneficiaries. Going on, the investigation said that Alaska has one of the highest placements of foster kids in residential treatment facilities. There are not enough, partly because there are not enough foster parents. It used to be that orphanages filled that role. Children are now being treated as psychiatric problems. Suicidal ideation is used overwhelmingly as an excuse, but often it is a response to being institutionalized. Kids are living worse off than when they came. Administering drugs simply for compliance is being done. One OCS foster kid in Mother Jones' profile was in North Star's care for 5 years and cost.
Point of order, Madam Chair. Can the member speak to the actual amendment before us and not a lawsuit regarding a different entity not relevant to the funding request?
Thank you.
I don't know that I'm speaking about a lawsuit. I'm speaking about an article. I don't know that this concerns a lawsuit.
Well, article regards North Star. Can we just get to the, dollar amount? So we get to, thanks.
The point, I think, is well made. And I would also note that in New Jersey litigation, I think I can talk about New Jersey litigation. A Better Childhood, which is the litigant in Alaska, has forced change with court oversight, pressure from ABC, diligent court-ordered monitoring, and now only 5% of foster kids are in group homes or residential treatment centers. The point that was made in subcommittee is, can we not, I don't mean to settle recklessly, but can we settle prudently? And not just do what translated from our alleged finance division. Again, they're nonpartisan. They must have read something, our colleagues in the room, that suggested the state wanted to initiate a public relations campaign. I don't want to do a public relations campaign. And so I'm asking to fund DFCS, which would then fund Department of Law half and save the state nominally. Granted, this could blow up on us. At least for this year, it would save the state $500,000. I'll leave it in your hands.
All right. Thank you, Representative Josephson. Representative Scott.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So I don't support this amendment. So what the money is there for is the department is requesting $1 million for its own legal defense on an ongoing lawsuit. Right. As far as who's to blame and who should settle, I don't think it's very wise for us to take a position on that because this is the early stage of the lawsuit. The member from Anchorage might be 100% correct down the road that something like that may take place. But what we are asked to do in the budget is to provide $1 million for them to begin to prepare their legal defense in the event of an ongoing lawsuit. So there's active litigations already been started. There's depositions that are being taken right as we speak. So what we have before us is a funding request. If we decrement the funding, we will cause adverse harm to the department's ability to defend themselves against a lawsuit. So that's why I say we should vote no. Thank you.
Further comments? All right. You maintain your objection, Representative Cronk?
Yes.
All right. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Colomb?
No.
Representative Cronk?
No.
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Galvin?
No.
Representative Hannon?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Ortez?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
3 yea, 8 nay.
By a vote of 3 yeas and 8 nays, amendment number 38 has not been adopted. It brings us to amendment number, actually, back on the record. So amendments number 39 and 40 are offered by Representative Ortiz. So we're going to go ahead and just wait until he's in the room to be able to provide to move those. So that brings us to amendment number 41 offered by Representative Josephson.
Madam Chair, I move to roll 41 to the bottom. And my motivation, so you know, is we're in further doing some further fact finding.
Okay. All right. Is there any objection to rolling amendment number 41 to the bottom, or just some rolling it somewhere? All right. That brings us to, without objection, then we're moving on to amendment number 42. Representative Josephson.
I move amendment 42.
All right, we have an objection. Representative Josephson.
So as noted in the on the amendment page, the Alaska Primary Care Association has requested $1.5 million for support to the department to accomplish FQHC, Federally Qualified Health Centers, Medicaid payment requests in order to adjust a PPS. And I'll find that. I know what that is. Adjust PPS rates for inflation adjustment unlawfully held. Provide Alaska FQHC's accurate and legal Medicaid payment for services delivered to patients who have coverage from both Medicare and Medicaid, known as dual eligibles. Amend regulations and procedures to provide FQHC's meaningful opportunities to apply for scope changes. Revise and clarify new START policies, and revise and clarify FQHC Medicaid cost reporting deadlines, processes, and requirements for APM rebates. So essentially, the Alaska Primary Care Associates, which have other grievances, I would note, but this is their smaller concern, they are seeking an appropriation of $1.5 million for support to the department to accomplish the Medicaid payment requests that I've outlined. And I think they've made a strong case that they need this sort of repayment. The PPS, by the way, is the prospective payment system. And I'd ask for your support. The MEI, by the way, is somehow an acronym for Inflation Adjustment Unlawfully Withheld. How that is what it is, I couldn't tell you. But if you get an MEI, it's not kind. It's not a good thing.
All right. Thank you, Representative Josephson. Representative Scott?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So I have one question to the maker of the amendment. I think what he is asking to do is to add the $1.5 million to the department's rate rebasement study. I believe that is what we're trying to do. I will say the department itself does not need that money. When I asked them, they're already rebasing rates for FQHCs. I'm not sure if it's appropriate to say that the state unlawfully withheld their rate rebasement increase. There's certainly dispute between FQHCs and if they are entitled to the Medicare rate or the Medicaid rate for reimbursements through the publicly funded program. They would argue that they're entitled to the full Medicaid rate. The state's position and other positions are as they get the Medicare rate. There's a big difference between what those numbers are. So if we are referencing $1.5 million, which was in their request for a rebasement study of their rates, that's already being done, and the department doesn't need an additional $1.5 million to do it. So thanks.
Any further comments? Okay, seeing none. Representative Kronk, you maintain your objection? All right. Objection has been maintained. Would you like to wrap up? Okay. Very good. Thank you. Okay, comment. Representative Galvin, just try to make sure. I know I probably didn't see you, so I'll give you a go ahead if you want to say something.
Wait, thank you.
My sequence right here.
I appreciate the opportunity. I also heard from Alaska Primary Care Association, and I didn't, when they were asking for support, I didn't understand that they were asking for the rate rebasement study, but they were asking to be paid an amount that better fits the services that they're giving, and perhaps that's what you're saying. To my colleague from Fairbanks, but I'm not certain, and I just wanted to offer that my understanding was that they just are struggling right now to make ends meet because of the differences in their reimbursement and how Medicaid is vastly different than the other services that they're providing, Medicare versus Medicaid. And so they're I'm going to say I support this because my understanding is they do need actual payment presently. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Galvin. Representative Josephson, if you would like to, since you didn't take wrap up, go ahead and do your wrap up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I thank my colleague from Anchorage. She's quite right that, and the amendment reflects this, as does this letter from the APCA. As I read, the adjusted PPS rates would actually adjust inflation. So it's not just a matter of the state has the resources to investigate rebasing. They are seeking, and the amendment reflects, that there be this $1.5 million appropriation payment request. So this is not just another study. It's beyond that. And I ask for your support.
All right. I'll go ahead and ask Representative Kronk, do you maintain your objection? All right. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Colomb?
No.
Representative Kronk?
No.
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Tomaszewski? No. Representative Galvin?
Yes.
Representative Hannon?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Ortez?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Four yay, seven nay.
By a vote of four yays and seven nays, amendment number 42 has not been adopted. That takes us to amendment number 43, Representative Josephson.
I move amendment 43.
There's been an objection. Representative Josephson, you want to speak to your amendment?
Yes. I can't, and I never got a satisfactory explanation. I cannot understand why the governor a year ago was alarmed by the rate of tuberculosis and now ostensibly isn't. He then, and my memory is fuzzy, was not terribly alarmed for a time, at least, by syphilis rates in Alaska either, but then I think restored them either in an amended or supplemental budget. I don't recall. My able colleague from East Fairbanks saw fit to restore or support, I don't, he can describe it better, but essentially he put a smaller sum than had been appropriated in FY24 into the FY25 bucket with an emphasis on curbing syphilis in the state of Alaska. But I would love if tuberculosis wasn't an issue, but it was an issue when I lived in Western Alaska. I had students that I was warned to stay away from because of their sputum, which was their cough. And I recall that distinctly and being perhaps selfishly concerned about that. But I also wanted to, and I'm using as my guide, an article in something called the Alaska Beacon. I'm teasing. The Alaska Beacon by Nada Hassanein. This could have been purchased by the Alaska Beacon. But in this national article, what's discussed is that even after the pandemic, rates remain high in Alaska, Nevada, South Carolina, and Washington state of tuberculosis. A course of treatment for one tuberculosis case can cost around $20,000 in the U.S., but when they become drug resistant, they cost at least, and it says at least $182,000. The article goes on to say that in Alaska, we have the highest TB rate. The number of cases per 100,000 residents surged. And by the way, this is a February 2024 article. The number of cases per 100,000 residents surged from 7.9 in 2021 to 13 in 2022. So it grew a lot over the span of a year. Continuing, the article notes, in Alaska, advocates and medical professionals have been pushing for more state funding for TB control. Brian Lefferts, Environmental Health and Engineering Director of the YKHC, which represents 58 tribes, said the state contributed about $960,000 through a tuberculosis and congenital syphilis prevention grant. But then Lefferts noted, quote, "We still have a really large TB problem, and so while that's great, there's always more that we could be doing." Alaska's community testing efforts focus on areas with the highest rates, including Alaska Native communities in the southwestern and northern regions of the state. In 2022, the article says, the state saw 95 cases, a 64% increase from the previous year. And finally, in the same article, republished in the Alaska Beacon, and I could try to find its original source, but at any rate, they quote a Miss Kelleher, who is Kayakan Athabascan from Nome, and she says, does Ms. Kelleher, TB can be insidious. It can look different ways. She noted that along with pulmonary TB, there are other types that affect the bones or kidneys. TB can be a great pretender. Kelleher, who is Kayakan Athabascan from Nome, knows the disease well. Her birth grandmother died from it. Her other grandmother, who adopted her mom, had a lung resection because of the disease. I just didn't get a satisfactory explanation from the administration, how we went just last year from a five-alarm fire to nothing, or nothing much. And so I ask for your support.
Mm-hmm. Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So Representative, basically right on most of the things I'd say as far as the web. The track of the money was in last year's budget. It was not included in this year's budget for tuberculosis. We did go ahead and put money in the budget specifically for tuberculosis as far as increasing that amount of money. I'm going to say probably not at this time. The funding mechanism is a multi-year incremental T. The purpose of that is to actually gauge how well our resourcing is going to kind of fight the issue of tuberculosis and syphilis. So my position is if it's going well, keep in mind we're going to have any money. Now they have some money. If it's going well next year and I'm fortunate enough to be back, I'd happily revisit it. But I'm a big believer in results-based budgeting, so I think the appropriation's probably fine how it is. I do appreciate the member from Anchorage for bringing up the issues of TB, though, because they are a challenge, and especially some of our rural communities. So,
thank you, Representative Stapp. Representative Josephson, did you want, do we have any other comments? Representative Galvin?
Thank you. Madam Chair, I appreciate that this went from zero to 350,000, but if their plan was at 1.6 million, that's substantially less. And knowing how quickly TB can spread, I'm concerned because I don't know that we can meet up again to quickly add more funds if we find out that there is a fire and that we need to put out the fire quickly. I'm just not certain how quickly we can get money in a supplemental in order to do that. So I mean, I don't know that we need 1.6 million, but I am concerned that 350, I think that might be one staffer or one person who, I'm not sure what that funding goes toward, but I'm concerned having in college worked in healthcare and been exposed to TB, I'm kind of familiar with how fast that can spread. And so with that in mind, I'll support this amendment. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Anyone else?
Madam Co-Chair, I'd like to speak if I may.
Yes, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I will start with a question for the member from Fairbanks. He made the statement that if things are going well, that he would be supportive of perhaps funding in next year's budget. I don't know what that means in relationship. If things are going well, if the tuberculosis spread rate is going down, then he would be supportive of more money. Or if he meant it's going well by, well, I just don't know what he meant by that. So with that said, you know, this budget is about making choices. It's about what our priorities are. And if tuberculosis is on the spread again, and it's starting to increase, particularly amongst indigenous populations, it would seem that that would be a priority for us to try to address. Now, with that said, I agree that going from 350 to 1.6 is perhaps a big leap. Well, it is a big leap. But I would like to offer a friendly amendment and bring that number down to $1 million. And I'm offering that amendment now.
Object.
All right. We have a motion to the conceptual amendment number one to change that from 1.6 million to 1 million. And there's an objection. Any further comments, Representative Ortiz?
Yeah.
Okay, Representative Stapp.
Just for clarification's sake, Madam Chair, it's actually $500,000 is what we put in the budget. And we split that between epidemiology, public health labs, and nursing. So, and I believe what this amendment, the underlying amendment is just to the epidemiology line. I believe that's the case. So as far as my comments, I didn't mean them taken out of context. What I meant is the resource, it's a relatively new thing that we are resourcing, so it would be beneficial to me to be able to measure the results of what we're giving money to. So I don't support the conceptual amendment or the underlying amendment because I am not sure, like, I'm sure that the money is ideally going to be utilized properly, but I'm not sure what those results are. So, again, it's a temporary increment in the budget. It's revisited every year, and if it's working, great. Let's resource it. But it's just an accountability metric, so that's why I'm opposed to the conceptual amendment. Thank you.
All right. Anyone else like to speak to a conceptual amendment number one? Seeing no one, Representative Ortiz, would you like to any points and wrap up?
No, Madam Chair. I made my point. I offer the amendment. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right, thank you. Thank you. You maintain your objection, Representative Stapp?
Yes.
All right, Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll? Conceptual amendment number one.
Representative Kronk?
No.
Representative Colomb?
No.
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Tomaszewski.
No.
Representative Galvin.
Yes.
Representative Hannon.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Ortez.
Yes.
Representative Edgman.
No.
Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Johnson.
No.
4 yay, 7 nay.
All right, that brings us back to amendment number 43, unamended. So do we have any further statements or comments on amendment number 43? Seeing none, Representative Josephson, would you like to wrap up?
Well, yes, one can hope that the members want the larger number, I suppose. What sticks with me is Brian Leffert's environmental health and engineering director, YKHC, 58 tribes, said the state contributed about 960, and for the record, 1,000, through a TB and congenital syphilis prevention grant. That was probably just for the YKHC, I suspect. And he said, we still have a really, last month and a half ago, we still have a really large TB problem. So while that's great, there's always more that we could be doing. I ask for your support.
All right. Thank you, Representative Josephson. Representative Kronk, do you maintain your objection?
Yes.
All right. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Colom?
No.
Representative Kronk?
No.
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Galvin? Yes. Representative Hannon?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Ortez?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
4 yay, 7 nay.
By a vote of 4 yays and 7 nays, amendment number 43 has not been adopted. That brings us to amendment number 44, offered by Representative Josephson.
I will not be offering 44.
Okay. And is that, so we're withdrawing a number... Amendment number 44 has been withdrawn. That takes us next to amendment number 45, offered by Representative Josephson.
I would not be offering amendment 45.
All right. That brings, let's see, amendment number 45 has been withdrawn. That brings us to amendment number 46, offered by Representative Josephson.
Move amendment 46.
Yeah. There's been an objection. Representative Josephson, would you like to speak to your amendment?
Yes. I want to take us back to a couple weeks ago. And human mind is such that, for all of us, that what is recent is what is keen and keenly felt. We heard from over 20 different Alaskans who called in as caregivers, and they did everything they did plead with us for assistance in making, these were folks that sounded committed to their clients. And so what this amendment does is, it is a shared burden of the state and federal receipts that the legislature would approve $15 million for direct service providers and personal care attendants. And I can tell you, and I don't remember I know what I did. I reviewed my notes. That's how I did it. We had callers from Homer, Kenai, Anchor Point, Kodiak, Big Lake, Anchorage, Wasilla. We had people from EEK. That was Edna Beebe. We had someone from Copper Center, Georgia Jackson. One of the largest contingents of Alaskans to call in and ask for assistance were seeking Amendment 46. And I have, and I bet it was a couple more, exactly 27 people that called in. That's probably about a quarter, probably maybe 20 to 25% of all the requests that were made. And this is, let's not forget that this is not just to pad the pockets of people so they don't make $18 an hour, God forbid they make $20. $1 an hour. But also, this is to keep people living in their homes, which is a budget savings for us. So much like other amendments we've looked at, this is a net savings for the state. It's something that, mind you, that we participated in last year and that the governor approved, if I'm correct. Am I correct, Alexander? I think so. There was no veto of this item, to my memory. And so I'd ask for your support. This is a significant item in this budget that needs our assistance.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Anyone else that would like to speak to this? Representative Staff?
Just a clarification, maybe from the maker of the amendment. I don't believe this is the same thing that we did last year. I don't remember this item being removed in the FY25 budget. So the home health care stuff, my understanding that we passed last year, is still in the budget. This was not a deletion in FY25.
Brief it is. House Finance back on the record. And we are on amendment number 47. Is that right?
46.
Yeah, 46. Okay. And we have moved amendment and you've spoken to it, but is there anything else in the introduction, Representative Josephson? I think you are finished up with that. So I think next up we had Representative Stapp. No more comments, Representative Stapp. Anyone else who would like to speak to Amendment 46?
Right. I would, Madam Chair.
All right, Representative Rotez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This particular amendment, I'm in full support. It's what we call upstream spending. It saves money for the state in the end. It's in adopting this amendment, we are being responsive to public comment. As was noted by the sponsor, we heard more about this particular issue and the need to address better pay for personal care assistance throughout the state of Alaska than any other topic other than, I think, ANSVA. We responded on the ANSVA issue. I think it's our responsibility to respond positively to the public comment that we heard. I think the need is there. We heard loud and clear that the need is there. And again, what we're trying to do is to make it more possible, more likely that people can remain in their homes for longer periods of time. Studies show that that brings about better results, better long-term living, and also, again, saves money. Makes good sense to me. I'm in full support. Thank you.
Representative Cronk.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. If I remember right, a majority of those phone calls were for senior care service. And while I support that, I think the question was for some of us is we really didn't know where this money was going, because I talked to some of these care providers personally. They're getting like $18 an hour. Well, if we're giving all this money, where is it actually going? Because I fully agree they should be paid more than $18 an hour, but until I really know where this money is going and they're benefiting from this money, I don't feel it's really prudent of me to support this amount of money. I mean, yes, I totally am with people on making sure we got people in our home being cared for, but I think we as the finance people should know exactly where this money is going. Is it getting into the caretaker's hands? And right now, I think there's a big question where it's going. So I'm going to oppose this with the thought process of that we actually get an answer of where this money's going and are these caretakers actually being paid a rate that they deserve. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cronk. Anyone else? Representative Josephson, do you have a wrap-up?
Yeah. We've had discussions in the committee room over the years about compelling pay and ways to do that. And that is a tricky issue. But many of the people that called in said that they wanted to continue the work. They were calling in because they couldn't make ends meet. And they were not all caring for seniors, and I mean, there'd be nothing wrong if they were. But for example, Vanessa Cunningham talked about her son being in a tragic car accident and being housebound by that accident from many, many years ago. I would note that I'm reminded that the other body saw fit must have been 11 months ago, to at one point in its version of the budget, afford DSP and PCAs $30 million. And that got reduced to 15, including the Fed. So this was seen as something that last year's session saw as appropriate, and I ask for your support.
All right. Representative Cronk, do you maintain your objection?
Yes.
Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll?
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Colomb?
No.
Representative Kronk?
No.
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Galvin? Yes. Representative Hannon?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Ortez?
Yes.
Representative Edgman? No. Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
4 yay, 7 nay.
By vote of 4 yays and 7 nays, amendment number 46 has not been adopted. It brings us to amendment number 47 by Representative Josephson.
I move amendment 47.
There is an objection. Would you please tell us about your amendment?
Yes. I have tried to, in the absence of a former colleague from downtown Anchorage, champion behavioral health care, which I'm aware, very, very aware, is in part, even in substantial part, covered by the 1115 waiver. But we know, particularly in the area of what's called capacity, which is the standing up and the startup costs of behavioral health, that the 1115 waiver is inoperative. And there are other situations where the type of treatment afforded, sobering centers come to mind. Other places, I think like Nugent's Ranch, which may be renamed in Wasilla, which is a residential alcohol treatment center, do not meet the four corners of what is required by the 1115 waiver. This number was not drawn out of thin air. It comes from the key campaign priorities 2024, the Key Coalition of Alaska. What are they? They're a coalition of parents, family members, self-advocates, and friends, including the Alaska Association on Developmental Disabilities, the Alaska Alliance of Direct Support Professionals. We just heard about some of that. The Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. Now, I want to be clear, they're a member organization. I don't recall where GCDSE stands, per se. But one of their priorities was to invest in behavioral health services, and they sought a support of $13 million to close the gap from a delayed rate increase. That's the other factor that's gone on, ladies and gentlemen, is that the regs may say that the state is supposed to, by X date, review Y service under Medicaid, but it doesn't necessarily do that. Just a little bit more here on this item. Behavioral health care is a vital and equal part of the healthcare system. Behavioral health treatment and recovery grants are crucial to thousands of underserved Alaskans to access essential treatment and services like medication and in-home care services. Alaskans with disabilities, family members, and other caregivers need access to timely behavioral health services. The Department of Health initiated a rate review intended to take effect in FY23. These rates have yet to be enacted. Community behavioral health providers are facing financial hardship due to delay in rate adjustment. According to preliminary data from the Office of Rate Review for new potential rates, the delayed implementation has resulted in $12.9 million in missed revenue for behavioral health providers over that time. Consequently, providers have been operating with the same rates since 2018, which predates the pandemic and associated rise in service needs. This highlights the critical need for swift action in enacting the updated rates to ensure fair compensation. The $12.9 million is designed to augment rates and would rectify the missing payments and allow providers to maintain their capacity while waiting for the new rate methodologies. Please support me in Amendment 47.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair Johnson. So I'm not supporting this amendment. So as the member from Anchorage mentioned, well, the whole reason we started the 1115 behavioral health waiver process was to reduce our basically general funds and our grants line to these providers and offset with federal funds through a program called 1115 demonstration waivers. So that renewal is taking place now. And then the second part of this year, they will go through the what's called 1115 amend process, in which they can request additional services that are not currently covered under behavioral health through Medicaid can make the list to be covered by behavioral health on Medicaid. As far as 5 years of lost rates, I'm not sure the 1115 basically has a review process every 5 years. So if you go from 2018, you add 5 years, that's 2023. That's when the renewal process started. It's being enacted in 2024, and then they will go through the amend process. So as far as the overall conversation on the department and the authority to change rates through Medicaid reimbursements, that is something that the legislature chose to give the department the administrative authority to do. So if we want to have a wider conversation on revoking their ability to do that and being it us or the body that does that, I'd certainly be interested in that. So those are my reasons why I'm going to be opposed to the amendment. Thank you.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I do not, this is not my area, and of course I'm not really familiar with the difference between 1115 waivers and 1115 amendments, but what I am familiar with is all the people who came into my office saying they're making $16 an hour, and they are taking care of Alaskans with deep behavioral health issues. So I guess my ask is if the maker of this amendment could help me to appreciate that these dollars would go toward that. That would help me a lot, given the nuances of the waiver and amend process that I'm not up to speed on. Thank you.
Anyone else would like to speak to amendment number 47? All right, Representative Josephson, if you would you like to wrap up and answer those questions?
Yes, I would, and I'll do the very best I can. Based on what I know today, the 1st of April, 2024. I've heard too many credible, first of all, I like this department. I do. This is one of the, I think, better departments in the state. But I've heard too many credible sources tell me repeatedly that there's a regulatory timeline for rate review that is simply not complied with. That I just have to believe that it's true. I don't have any, I lack the evidence to suggest that it's untrue. So when Representative Staff says, why do we give them this authority? Well, I guess we thought they would complete the rate review on time. That's my answer. My answer to Representative Galvin, while this could translate into pay increases, I think it's less about the providers and more about the services. The DSP PCA thing was more about the pay and the services, but this is more about both the starting up of behavioral health programs and the providing of those services. No doubt there's linkage, and they're interconnected. But in my mind's eye, the focus is about the services more than the pay.
Okay. Anyone else? Do you maintain your objection, Representatives?
Yes.
Yes.
Drunk. Very good. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Colom?
No.
Representative Kronk?
No.
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Galvin?
Yes.
Representative Hannon?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Ortez?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
4 yea, 7 nay.
By a vote of 4 yeas and 7 nays, amendment number 47 has not been adopted. It brings us to amendment number 48, and that is offered by Representative Josephson. Representative Josephson?
I will not be offering amendment 48.
All right. Amendment number 48 has been withdrawn. And that brings us to amendment number 49.
I move amendment 49.
Amendment number 49. There has been a motion made and there is an objection. Representative Josephson.
Well, silly me. I was unaware. I was not unaware at all that our budgets routinely have language that says the state won't participate in Medicaid. Is it Medicaid-funded abortions? Essentially, it's Medicaid, at least partially funded abortions. But I didn't know that this, and maybe this is the first time, I don't know. I'm beyond aware, that is, I'm really aware that the governor vetoed about $320,000 from the court system in 2019 because I wrote a lengthy op-ed about it and said it was unconstitutional, which it was, and the court said it was. This is one step less unconstitutional in that it's we're the appropriators. What the governor did in the past was, he said, because he's required to in a sentence or two, he said, I'm taking this from you, court system, because I don't like your rulings, which is incredibly honest of him, but really, really improper. What I didn't know is that we do this too. So, look, I wanted to give you something that was not terribly controversial this afternoon to think about. And so this is the best I could come up with. I'm kidding. And I don't mean to treat this lightly. This is, ladies and gentlemen, this is a cut to Medicaid because case after case starting in around 2000 says that essentially if the state provides OBGYN care to women, that is delivering healthy babies, pap smears, gynecological care, that it must do the whole panoply of care. And, that would include this $91,000. So I ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Representative Galvin.
I just want to make sure that I'm understanding this clearly. So what we're seeing is we're restoring funds that were withdrawn by the governor because the governor looked at the total amount of OBGYN care that he felt went to services that shouldn't be covered. And so he took that amount out of the budget. I want to make sure I'm understanding that correctly. And if so, if that's what I understand, then I will be supporting this amendment because Medicaid services are Medicaid services, and any decision about what services a woman is receiving, and of course, it should be legal, but any decisions they're making should be between a woman and their caregiver only. And so I will be supporting that if I'm understanding this correctly, and I'm sure that the representative will clear this up.
Thank you, Representative Galvin. Anyone else like to speak to Amendment Number 49? Seeing no one additional, Representative Josephson, would you like to speak and wrap up?
Yes. Just two comments. The first is the number is surprisingly small, and I don't know if that relates to the Mifepristone debate, and maybe abortions are less expensive than they were. I don't know. But the answer to Representative Galvin's question is that this was a House Finance Committee cut in a CS, not a governor's cut. So I'm asking to restore.
All right. Anyone else? To maintain your objection, Representative Cronk? All right. Very good. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Cronk?
No.
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Galvin?
Yes.
Representative Hannon?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Ortez?
Yes.
Representative Colomb?
No.
Representative Edgman? Representative Foster?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
No.
5 yay, 6 nay.
By vote of 5 yays and 6 nays, Amendment Number 49 has not been adopted. That brings us to Amendment Number 50 by Representative Josephson.
I move Amendment 50.
Yeah.
Amendment Number 50 has been moved. There is an objection. Representative Josephson, would you please tell us about your amendment?
Yes, thank you. I'm just looking at one last page here. So the amendment concerns senior and disabilities grants and a request from AgeNet AgeNet advocating for older Alaskans. So I met with them. I bet many of you did. They have their priorities, as do just about every agency. And I wanted to really focus on something here. We had a discussion, and I don't know that we've completely resolved it. I know that Mr. Henderson did yeoman work to try to resolve it, and it may be that it's not knowable right now. But I think many of us were concerned that the monies that I think were paid for ARPA or something, a COVID grant in the amount of $2.7 million in general funds for senior community-based grants, some of that had lapsed, and we were trying to estimate, well, how much is available and unspent, and can we just top that off to get seniors back to the $2.7 million? Frankly, I don't even know where we left that. But this is a separate issue, but the same sort of need. I see in my notes here that probably Mr. Gordon Glazer, who generally meets with AgeNet, noted, because I see my handwriting, it says 19% to 21% of people in Alaska, so one in five of us, maybe not in this room, but maybe, no, not in this room, are over 65. There is a hollowing out, my notes say hollowing out of 30 to 40 year olds. Well, that's the out-migration. We know about that. But this number comes from AgeNet, which says, additionally, they request, along with the $2.7 million, a 5% increase in senior community-based grants over the FY24 funding level, or $998,231. We rounded it up and gave them an extra $69, apparently. From 2022 to 2023, the population of older Alaskans, age 75 and older, increased over 5%, according to Alaska Commission on Aging Statistics. This is an old state. There's a lot of slips and fall threats, but this is an old state. This is a population most at risk of going into an institution without the support of senior community-based grants. Community grants serve older Alaskans all over the state, including Anchorage, Bethel, Fairbanks, Kenai, Matsu, and Nome, allowing seniors to live in the community of their choice. Less than this amount would require service providers to cut basic senior services such as those listed above. And then under amplification, great word, from 2013 to 2023, the number of meals provided under seniors and disabilities meal grants to older Alaskans around the state increased 13% from 611,000 meals to 690,000 meals. So we got, in a decade, the need for another 80,000 meals. The cost of food increased 27% in that decade. I also see House Finance testimony from March 12, 2024. This is written testimony. I don't see the author, but that same figure of $998,300 is listed. This is also a request of the AARP, I believe. Yes, right here. Senior and Disability Community Grants. AARP of Alaska, Senior Safety Net and Health Security. So this is a really, really righteous amendment. That's what this is. This is as legitimate as they come in this amendment packet. I ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Representative, ready for these. House Finance back on the record. We are on amendment number 50, and there was a little bit of confusion as to, or some inquiry on exactly what was being added to and what monies were available. So if we could, Mr. Painter, Director for Legislative Finance, would you come forward and just explain, give us an overview of the monies that are already in this line and explain what we're doing moving forward here.
Yes, for the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division. So within senior community-based grants, that allocation in the CS right now, there's $21.7 million of funding, plus there is some amount of COVID funding, COVID federal funding that is carrying forward from prior years. That amount was $5.8 million heading into FY24. That COVID money must be spent. There's an appropriation in the CS right now that extends those through FY25, but all the COVID money has to be spent by January 28th, 2025. So some amount of that $5.8 million will carry forward into the first half of FY25. So this amendment, as I understand it, would add to the existing funding that's in the numbers section, that $21.7 million that is there right now of all fund sources.
All right, thank you. Is there anyone else, anyone that would like to ask any additional questions for Mr. Painter before Representative Galvin?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Mr. Painter, my question is whether there is any additional funds to keep up with inflationary costs, you know, this year versus last year. For example, what did that look like?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, my understanding, and I'm not an expert in this department, but my understanding is that the rates are expected to be comparable from calendar year 24 to 25 using the COVID funding to augment the rates. So while that COVID funding remains, the rates should be relatively steady, but then potentially after that in FY26, there might be a shortfall when the COVID funding ends. But I don't believe there's an increase built in FY25 currently.
One follow-up?
Yes.
Thank you. So there is no increase built in once the COVID monies are gone, and we are seeing a 5% increase in the number of people being served. Is that what I'm hearing?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, yes. So there's an increase in the number of seniors. I'm not sure if that's – I can't answer if that's translating into an increase in the number of receiving care, but there's no change in the level of funding.
Thank you.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Painter, can you tell me, is this increment in the base?
Through the chair, Representative Quam, this amendment is a base budget increment.
All right, thank you.
All right, has everyone got the questions addressed or concerns? Any additional, anything additional for Mr. Painter? All right, thank you. Representative Galvin.
Thanks. I just have a comment that the reason I'll be supporting this amendment is that it makes sense to me that if someone is age of 75, they likely will be seeing an increased number of seniors to serve. And knowing what I have learned about the costs of malnutrition for one day in the hospital for a senior, which is in the area of north of $40,000, and one day in the hospital for malnutrition is many times more than an entire year of Meals on Wheels. And I have heard, in fact, we all heard testimony that some of the folks who are delivering services to our seniors They're reducing from 5 times a week to 3 times a week. And some of the communities are removing their place-based meals. So with that in mind, I will certainly be a yes vote here. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right. Anyone else? Seeing no one additional, Representative Cronk, you maintain your objection?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Galvin?
Yes.
Representative Hannon?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Ortiz?
Yes.
Representative Colomb?
No.
Representative Cronk?
No.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
4 yea, 7 nay.
By vote of 4 yeas, 7 nays, amendment number 50 has not been adopted. That brings us to amendment number 51. Representative Josephson.
Object.
All right, there is an objection. Representative Josephson, would you please tell us about your amendment?
Yes. In some respects, this reminds me of the DOC cut that I opposed last week. And I want to tell you what the department told me. So I'm reading from the notes that I, from my meeting with them on the 5th of March. They noted that enrollment and utilization of Medicaid are hard to predict. There is attrition because we know that after the COVID national emergency ended, there had to be re-enrollment, but re-enrollment does occur. I misspoke. Essentially, they screened everyone to make sure they qualified. That's the simple version. But since then, others have re-enrolled. And they asked, are those who are disenrolled generating services for the department in other ways? So perhaps they're generating services that are not directly Medicaid services that the department may need to help provide. They sought $21 million for rate increases based on rebasing and inflation. When I say they, I mean the governor and his department. They wanted $21 million for rate increases based on rebasing and inflation. DOH uses what is called the resource-based relative value scale for physician payment purposes. It's a CMS system as well. It's called the RBRVS. That's what they use. They said that just in that category, physician payment services, they needed $5 million just for that category. The Medicaid rate has some catching up to do with the Medicare rate, they noted. The rates that they last rebased went into effect on July 1 of 23. But they have every reason to believe that there's going to be further rebasing this summer of various rates. I wish I could be more concrete. And in combination with re-enrollment, they thought it was unwise, did the department and the governor, effectively, to cut this $10 million. They said, for example, that other rate reviews are pending and will be completed this year. Those will drive costs further and are reflected in this ask. One of them, they noted, is for the federally qualified health centers, who, after rate review, will need a $7 million increment. So there, we already looked at one federally qualified health center amendment. You declined to accept that. I respect that. There's going to be a second issue that's going to come up, a more costly issue relative to federally qualified health centers. But at any rate, the department telegraphed to me that these funds are going to be needed. And I ask for your support to reinstate the governor's budget and fund these $10 million.
Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So I think this is a great amendment to talk about. So I am opposed to the amendment. So you will find that the governor's budget asked for 20, $1 million in Medicaid increases. $11 million of that went to rate rebasements, right? I opted to reduce the Medicaid services budget by $10 million, to reject about half of that request for the purpose of Medicaid utilization and redetermination. So to give a background, during the pandemic, no one was allowed to be disenrolled from the Medicaid program. Not one person, right? That went on for years. During that time, the federal government gave the state and all the other states what's called enhanced FMAP to cover the fact that we could not disenroll people from Medicaid who, quite honestly, were not qualified to be on Medicaid. They should not be on the program. Therefore, we were not allowed to disenroll them from the program. So now, the department has begun what's called Medicaid redeterminations, and they are woefully behind schedule on Medicaid redetermination. So since last year when they started, you can go to health.alaska.gov to look at the updated numbers. They have initiated 171,703 redeterminations. They have 69,000 redeterminations left to go, and they have to complete those by January of this coming year. That's with an extension that they already received from the feds. On top of that, they are almost at a 40% rate of what's called pended for additional information. So about all the redeterminations that they've been doing, 40% of them are being pended for additional information. Okay, so I do not believe that you can take 100,000 people off the Medicaid program and not reduce your overall spend. That seems very illogical to me. So when I asked the department regarding this, they told me that, hey, these funds were needed, as Representative Josephson stated, because they had not planned. They do not plan to complete Medicaid redeterminations this year. My argument is that is not acceptable. Therefore, complete Medicaid redeterminations. And if you have to come back because the number's off, by the way, this amount of money represents about 4 days of the total state annual spend on Medicaid. That's what we're talking about, 4 days. So if you do the redeterminations and you come back and you need money because you had overutilization of the program, that's fine. But don't tell me you're not going to do the redeterminations and ask for money. That's not acceptable. That's why I pushed for the reduction.
Right. Thank you, Representative Stapp. Anyone else? Very good. Representative Gronk, you maintain your objection? Thank you. Representative Josephson, I guess we got one ahead. You might get your mind changed. Representative Josephson.
Well, the one thing I didn't understand from my friend from Fairbanks is, I understand there's redeterminations, but then he seemed to suggest that 100,000 people will be removed. No, that isn't what a redetermination is. Most of them probably are still Medicaid qualifying. So we're still going to have hundreds of thousands of people in public health care. Because I think we're well over 200,000 now. I stand by the department. They don't think this decrement is a good idea, and we'll see it as a supplemental if we reject this amendment. And by the way, the 4 days may not sound like a lot, but this becomes newsworthy in June when providers aren't paid. That's what happens. So I ask for your support. June of next year.
All right. Now, do you maintain your objection? Okay. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Galvin?
Yes.
Representative Hannon?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Ortez?
Yes.
Representative Colom?
No.
Representative Kronk?
No.
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Edgman?
Yes.
Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
5 yay, 6 nay.
By a vote of 5 yays and 6 nays, amendment number 51 has not been adopted. That brings us to amendment number 52 by Representative Josephson.
I will not be offering Amendment 52, and I withdraw.
All right. Amendment number 52 has been withdrawn. And that brings us to amendment number 53 by Representative Josephson.
I move amendment 53.
All right, we have made an amendment made, and there is an objection. Representative Josephson, would you please tell us about your amendment?
Yes, this was an amendment offered by my colleague from downtown Anchorage, and I thought the full committee should consider it. As you see here, in January 2024, the Alaska State Ombudsman released an investigative report that revealed deficiencies at DOH's Adult Protective Services. Which it concluded resulted, I think it concluded, in the death of an elder under their care. No doubt there were other variables, but I think that's at least partially right. The Ombudsman's analysis substantiated the allegations and included recommendations to support APS to perform duties sufficiently. On the recommendations, the Ombudsman recommends adding, this sounds pretty compelling to me, the Ombudsman. And remember, they work for the legislature. Do I have that right? They're our employee, are they not? So our employee recommends adding funding for three permanent full-time positions to be funded for 5 years. This amendment adds funding for full-time temporary positions to match the recommendation of temporary funding. A future legislature may choose to reevaluate in FY30. I don't know. Strikes me, I wish I could, first of all, read all the Ombudsman's reports. Time is a factor. But it strikes me that, when the Ombudsman, in a competitive, I've been on the Ombudsman hiring committee, it's competitive, and when they offer us advice, we should take it. I don't have a better source. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. A further discussion on amendment number 53? Okay. Is the objection maintained, Representative Kronk?
Yes.
All right. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Galvin?
Pass.
Representative Hannon?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Ortiz?
Yes.
Representative Colomb?
No.
Representative Kronk?
Yes.
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Galvin?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
5 yea, 6 nay.
By a vote of 5 yeas and 6 nays, amendment number 53 has not been adopted. That brings us to amendment number 54, which is offered by Representative Ortiz. So we will take that amendment up at a more convenient time when we have Representative Ortiz back in the room. So next up, we have amendment number 55, which is offered by Representative Josephson.
I think this is very briefly.
Yeah, briefly. House Finance, back on the record. Representative Josephson, amendment. You are presenting amendment number 55.
Madam Chair, I move and ask that amendment 55 be rolled behind amendment 54 so that Representative Ortiz can have the... They're comparable amendments, and I ask that we roll them both forward.
Okay. Is there any objection? Change it to putting that back to back when Representative Ortiz comes back to the room. Seeing none, well, let's take up Let's go ahead and take up amendment number 56, just so we have a comparable number of amendments. Representative Josephson?
I move 56.
Object.
All right, there's been an objection. You want to tell us about your amendment, Representative Josephson?
Yes. Amendment 56 is for an increment for the Alaska Infant Learning Program. The amendment proposal expands agency capacity for outreach and expansion. The agency is Senior and Disability Services Early Intervention Learning Program. With this increment, DOH may expand outreach to families with children at risk or who experience developmental delays. Over the past 10 years, ILP has received flat funding, which has not been adequate to keep up with inflation and increased costs of running ILP programs and services. Early intervention has proven lifelong benefits to program recipients. However, program participation rates remain low. Children from birth to 3 years are in the most important developmental phase of their lives. Support for early intervention efforts helped to bring Alaska up to the national average for outcomes for young children with developmental disabilities. I ask for your support.
Further comments, discussion on amendment number 56? Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I just wanted to comment that I was grateful to hear from the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education because I was not aware that this particular program has been flat funded for 10 years. And I appreciate that the work of the ILP programs are very important and must be kept strong, particularly because they are able to identify, especially the small children with the developmental delays early on, and help prepare families and the children for a better future. No, thank you. I'll be supportive.
Thank you, Representative Galvin. Anyone else that would like to speak to amendment number 56? Right, seeing no one. Representative Staff?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So, you know, when we started this budget process, we rattled off kind of a list of things that expenses that were not out of our budget, saying we didn't have surplus, and we're now on 56 amendments. The vast majority of them add a bunch of money to the operating budget. So I'm not going to support the amendment, not because I don't think we should probably have a good discussion about expanding outreach for adult infant learning programs, but I see no associated reduction to most of these ads, and I find it a little irritating that we talk about how there was no space in our budget for either capital or fixed expenses, yet we've gone through over 50 amendments to have very, very large additions to the said budget. So that's my, I guess, my gripe and my no. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Stapp. Anyone else that would like to speak to amendment number 56? Representative Pannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. I'm going to speak in favor of this amendment and ask us to remember that the longest and best return of our investment is the early investment. So if we can identify a child very early on that has developmental delays, we perhaps prevent a lot of costs that might be associated with a later term identification. So when we are looking at adds to the budget, adding programs for early intervention, and it's hard to track because you can't show the negative. We don't know what we wouldn't have, but we do know that children with developmental delays, their costs compound over time. And so the earlier we intervene, the better return our investment and the better services and potentially the least growth in our budget in other places. So for $750,000, I urge you to support Amendment 56.
Anyone else that would like to speak to Amendment number 56? Representative Cronk, do you maintain your objection?
Yes.
All right. Madam Secretary, would you please call excuse me. I'm so sorry. Representative Josephson.
Well, I just want to thank you. I appreciate the comments from the member from downtown Juneau. I also would note that if folks are keeping track, we were told that the budget had $152 million of surplus. Amendments to date have cost roughly $63 million. I did make an effort to move $172 million from ADA into a place where it could be used to, for example, I mean, what was intended was the GRIP, but it could be used for capital funds. And I guess the committee has to ask itself, does it believe that, for example, and maybe it will, that the other body's finance committee will agree to claw back about $140 million in CBR monies? I don't know. I mean, so there are many different ways that this budget can come out, and I think I ask for your support. This is a worthy program.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Representative Cronk, you maintain your objection?
Yes.
All right. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Hannon?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Ortiz?
Yes.
Representative Colom?
No.
Representative Cronk?
No.
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Galvin?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
4 yea, 7 nay.
By a vote of 4 yeas and 7 nays, amendment number 56 has not been adopted. I'm going to go ahead and take up maybe one, maybe two more amendments, just because we have rolled a number of amendments so far, and I'm trying to get through about half before we finish up. But so let's go ahead and you are up with amendment number 57, Representative Josephson.
Yes. Very brief of these.
Brief of these. Back on the record, Representative Josephson.
I'm going to withdraw 57.
All right. Amendment number 57 has been withdrawn. That brings us to amendment number 58. We might actually make by 4:30, maybe.
I move 58.
We have an objection. Representative Josephson, would you please tell us about your amendment?
Yes. Very brief.
Brief at ease. Finance back on the record. Representative Josephson.
I move that we take up 59 before 58 because of the type of funding.
Um, Actually, you know, I think if there's no objection, we can just take these up tomorrow. Unless you're really feeling good about wanting to do these two right now. I mean, I'm okay with that, but I'd be happy to just finish up right now. Okay. Thank you, Andy. Very good.
Yeah, you recovered quite nicely, didn't you?
Yes.
Right next door. It's tight.
Our next meeting is tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. and we will continue taking up the remaining amendments and see no further business before the committee. We are adjourned at 4:30 p.m.